nothing wrong for you to say something in the meeting, and then we can deal with the other one. If you are happy that the members wish to point out one or two, three things, as we have done with the other ministers also, to say these are uppermost in our minds that we wish to point out. And with your permission, honourable members, if that is okay, that we do that first, and then we can allow the minister to go back to the cabinet, and then we can deal with the quantum of our discussion here today. I also want to bring to your attention, honourable members, if you haven't seen, but in the ATC, it was announced that the president has ordered the special investigating unit to investigate the matter of the Tshwane University. I think it was in the 80s at the end of last week. And yeah, it was in the ATC. We can give you the copy of the ATC. The Tshwane, what is it? University of Technology. It was the college. The college. The Tshwane. Yes. I thought I want to bring to your attention that it's in there, honourable members, in the ATC, that the president has asked for investigation, and that the committee, I trust, will support the fact that the investigation must be undertaken, and that, Minister, we will obviously ask the department to keep us abreast if there are anything coming your way on the matter. Indeed, we cannot be a happy committee in instances like that, because their preoccupation must be learning and educating young people. The preoccupation cannot be parties or anything else. And if there's anything to the allegations, the law must absolutely take its course. And we always want our money to come back that has been used in a manner that it is not. Of course, they remain on our agenda, honourable members, because you know that the Auditor General has also pointed out issues. So the department would know that we have asked them every quarter when they come to update us on those institutions that are a problem. So they have been, that college has been on our radar. Having said all of that, honourable members, and thank you for your understanding in that matter, I allow some members, if they would want to point out to the minister what is uppermost in our mind, other than UniZulu, to the minister. Kilian, Bazoli, Mkunu, Van der Westhuizen, Matthew.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it is good to have Dr. Pandor here with us today. As we all know, we have an onerous responsibility as the committee, but so also the department with the new funds, additional funds for students having been allocated through the budget, that we make sure that every rand is spent for the intended purpose, but also that we get value for money from spending in the higher education sector. That obviously would place additional responsibility on universities to ensure that there's an improved throughput rate, and also on the institutions such as NSFAS. And I will appreciate it if the minister could give us the assurance that it's no more business as usual in the Department of Higher Education and Training, but that every effort will be made to ensure that we make this money perform for South Africa, to strengthen our skills base, to make sure that we have people with the right qualifications to take up the positions in our economy, but also to make sure that those students who benefit from the public education institutions also have a responsibility to plow back in society. I do have a personal concern that we very often have qualifications and also skills development for people who no longer reside in South Africa, but who actually go abroad, which is not bad in itself. But obviously, we need to make sure that at least for the numbers of years that they benefit from our institutions, they will also plow back into the South African economy. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Welcome, Minister. It's great to have such an experienced person coming into this portfolio. The two things that worry me most are, first of all, the really struggling universities, and Zululand being one, which we're going to look at today, Walter Sisulu being another, and there are a couple of others. These are universities which I don't think just pouring more money into them is the answer. To me, they need something much more substantial. And I think that's a huge concern, these universities at the bottom of the pile. And then the second thing is the long-term sustainability of the student funding. It's wonderful to have so much money. I'm sure the department doesn't know what's hit it. The only department with more money than in the whole cabinet. But the long-term sustainability of the student funding does worry me considerably. You know, this year, we heard last week only 90,000 students have taken the opportunity to get money. Next year, it will be a lot more because all those under 350,000 will now be applying in good time to NSFAS, and you will have to sustain this year's lot, and the next year you will have to sustain more. And looking at what's been provided, by the fourth year, my instincts tell me that there won't be enough money anymore. And so we're going to be caught in a trap of funding something that can only be funded for a short period. And then the thing that concerns me is it may be difficult to find the money, and yet students will expect it. So the long-term sustainability, I think if we could have a presentation from the department on their views of, say, a 10-year plan for how this might roll out and what it's going to cost, that would be very useful. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We are happy to have the Minister. For me, it's what is immediate is getting NSFAS right. If we can do that, in order to cap what is happening in our institutions, we have strikes now, not because people want free education, they've got free education, but the inefficiencies are within NSFAS in terms of disbursement of funds. The second one, Minister, that I'm a bit passionate about is getting the community colleges to be what we envisage. Thank you. Otherwise, the department, honestly, is working hard. We expect inefficiencies because in every sphere you cannot be as thorough as we would want, but we are still getting there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Minister and the officials. Quite a few things from my side, and therefore I'll be brief, even to the point of perhaps being cryptic. I'm concerned about the state of our community colleges. And you were in Parliament last week when I said that I'm concerned about the 63% of our school entrants that do not leave school with a matric, and the fact that two-thirds almost of our young people do not get any other opportunity than to improve their skills base and even to eventually achieve a matric via alternative means. I'm concerned about the failure of the National Certificate Vocational, and I'm grateful that your colleague, Minister Nzimande, decided to reverse the decision to phase out the NATED offering at our TVET colleges. But please, Minister, those syllabi are completely outdated, and I cannot understand why we need to import skills from Pakistan and other countries to come and fix cell phones and so on. There's such a huge market out there, but our colleges' syllabi are completely outdated. Then I'm also concerned about the state of our TVET colleges. You were the minister who did, in my book, the right thing to decide that the TVET College Council should be more autonomous and that all the staff should be working for the college councils. That decision was then reversed by government, and they are now all your officials of the Department of Higher Education and Training, and therefore the scope to attract people with the right skills have been limited. Also, my impression is that we do not have finality on the staff establishment of our TVET colleges, and we cannot hope to attract quality people to come and work in our TVET colleges unless we create some leeways to attract the best people. And if we cannot get people the security and show them what their career path will be, because this is now the final staff establishment. And then lastly, I'm concerned, again to refer to NSFAS, that the NSFAS scheme has become a bit of a cash cow for many of our TVET colleges. They take on students because it's a guaranteed income, but the throughput rates have been dismal, to say the least, and there's been no consequence for college principals if they fail in large numbers, and I'm concerned that this might be repeated at some of our universities, where the academic merit might be taking the second row, and the fact that these students can pay and the government is willing to pay whatever fees the universities are setting for hostel fees, for textbooks, for study, etc., that may become a game amongst people that want to again fill their coffers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, Minister, good morning, officials. I also take this opportunity to express my welcome to yourself, Minister. Through the announcement of yourself as Minister comes at a time when we have just made a few visits around the country on TVET and universities. And what came out of those visits was what was anticipated to happen that was supposed to be wrong all the way after the pronouncement of funding for students, where certain parties were seeing just doom and gloom on the first couple of days for registration. We found that to a large extent the universities made arrangements and the running was smooth, apart from the few hiccups that were there. So there was some sort of anticipation, and the officials made very good of it. There were innovations on how do they get through to the working students, how nobody was supposed to be sent back. Now, it was a stamp of approval to say that what we have been looking for has come through, there's been funding. The problem that now arises is for the department to look at the management of that budget, because it might have doubled beyond what they were used to. Now, related to the funding that comes through is the NSFAS issue. I think my colleagues have said quite a bit about it, which we think the department should look deeper into and give attention to NSFAS, its operations, and its presence through their own admission. When they went to Ikurileni, there was some sort of improvement in terms of interaction. So we shows that if they can find their footprint all over where they are accessible, it might also help, and I think the department would also do good in following that. The emphasis on TVETs and community colleges, actually, the long and short of it was to make the TVETs fashionable, to make sure that the students who come from high school have access, and the funding came back again, transport came back again, stipends came back again, accommodation came back again. And those are issues that are very tricky, and that's where a lot of our either strikes come from, because of the convenience part of it. And if attention could be given to that, we do know that between ourselves and the Department of Human Settlements, we might be looking at how the part of accommodation is dealt with. But streamlining the issues from a departmental part, where you either give money or on a basis of radius, or have a straight fee that says for each and every student, this is the amount allocated to transport given there. So those are smaller issues, but they've got a huge impact on how the institutions are run smoothly. And if the department or yourself can give some attention to it, it will have a ripple effect on the actual learning environment. And that's where I would like to go. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, honourable members. My addition is good news, Fort Hare. We're very happy. It's getting on track. Our oversight visit showed vast improvements of many things. There's still a bit of gripe among the students. We're worried about the current accommodation strike that is there, and we hope it's not going to pan out in a manner that some of the other strikes panned out, where such a beautiful building was brought ashes. Very painful, that one. But we're very happy that Fort Hare is finally getting on track. The second one is, we hope that there's a large group of young people that went to go and study in Cuba to become doctors. We hope that the internship issue between health and higher education can be sorted, because we could never have spent such a lot of money and large group of young people that now look like having an uncertain future. So we trust the department can come back to us on that one. We have been dealing quite a bit with the certificate backlog. That one has been in a terrible state. The backlog goes before 1994. A lot of effort have been made, but I'm afraid that we're not quite in the clear on that issue. It's connected to the fact that our young people can't get jobs without the certificate, and we think that matter needs to be done. I agree with the members on the financing for the TVET colleges. Our oversight visit showed that they give you ghost students. That's not on their book, simply because they can access the money. And so we agree there needs to be a big injection of technologies into the TVET colleges also, so that that matter can be attended to. I'm going to leave that there. We, Minister, of course, you can, you don't have to respond to all of it, but if you would like to say something. And welcome, welcome, welcome to higher education and training.
Thank you very much, Chairperson September and honourable members. I do take the advice very seriously and have noted all that you have said, and thank you for the kind words of welcome. I agree, Chairperson, to a great degree with the number of the issues that have been raised. I think we've been sometimes rather unfair to NSFAS because we've given them bigger and bigger mandates without giving them bigger and bigger admin or bigger and bigger statutory power. So I do think we need to rethink the model. I'm one of the few, probably with Shivambu, who was there at the beginning when we started what was called TEFSA in 1992, I think it was. So it's really morphed into quite a complicated terrain and institution. And apart from the legislation that Minister Asmal steered through Parliament to create NISFAS, we haven't really worked on the model and have it reshaped to respond to the complicated tasks we've assigned to it. So I do think it needs to be rethought. And I would agree with Professor Bozzoli that I don't think that funding for poor students should be entirely a public revenue responsibility. But I think that the government needs to look at what form of partnerships it could establish with a range of partners, including international partners, because the needs in South Africa cannot be satisfied by the institutions in South Africa on their own. So we really need to look at expansion, look at collaboration, look at sending many more students out into the international domain, and of course improve what our institutions offer as graduate and undergraduate training to young people in the country. A particular focus has to be the TVET college sector, because that's where we will get the skills. And again, the community colleges are very important. But my sense of them is we mustn't try to make them quasi-schools. I think they must offer a very different set of skills opportunities with, of course, appropriate accreditation. And that will be something that we will be devoting a lot of time to. We've spoken about this with the DGs. We really want vibrant community colleges that will help us get skilled persons in employment, allow for that improvement and upskilling, but link very carefully with economic opportunity rather than a diploma acquisition. So I really think we have an opportunity there. Let me say that on this matter of financial administration, clearly that's something we must manage very, very well. But let me assure the committee that I will be really nasty where there is corruption, because I hate dishonesty and the absence of integrity with public funds in particular. So we will come down very hard where there's abuse of public resources, and we'll continue to provide support to TVET colleges to improve their financial administration as well as the staff admin. I think autonomy is important where it's appropriately managed. At times there can be far too much and the institution collapses. So as you give autonomy, you must ensure that you have appropriate management capacity in the department to be able to support and steer the system and institutions to work most efficiently. So we'd have to look at how we balance the need for increased autonomy and the ability to actually execute lying within the institutions and the department. Sometimes we want to steer because we are not sure of our own capacity, rather than really wanting to hobble institutions. But I have taken a decision, Chairperson. I was enjoying myself in The Hague, giving an inaugural lecture as a visiting honorary professor when I got the phone call. I choked during my lecture. I decided at that moment that I will go back to South Africa and I'm going to listen for a while, because the department has changed from what it was in 2004 to 2009. And so I'm really on a listening campaign. And we will then, you know, on reflection, determine where we put our first finger on the pulse. But thank you very much for all the notes of advice. I really appreciate them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. And thank you again for taking the time to come out of the cabinet and to come and be with us. I think this is the entire committee that is here, not quite the entire. There are some parties that whose member has left and has not replaced them. And then the rest of the members are really members from other smaller parties who come and go and go to different meetings. But this is more or less the regular group of people that are in this committee. This is the committee secretary, Anele Kabengezi. And then there's the content advisor that is here. And then there's the media person for us on the other side, Maputi, the Cabal. And then the rest are study group staff members that are there, and the rest are visitors that are here. So that is us. Thank you very much for that. I'm going to move us along, honourable members. We're now going to deal with the presentation from the CHE. I remind you again that as part of the list of oversight that we've done, in particularly on the University of Zululand, one of the decisions that we have taken was to then wait for the report from the CHE, give the minister an opportunity to go through the report, and then come back to the portfolio committee to do the presentation to ourselves. We would have then, honourable members, have dealt with a range of different things as it relates to UniZulu, and we hope that all of these different things would give us a better idea on what next it is that, as the portfolio committee, we might want to suggest to the department as it relates to this matter. So that's a bit the background to that, and I'm going to ask the chair, I'm sure you're going to inform us who's your delegation, and then also we must apologize that the Parliament has given us a romantic screen this morning, and I would urge honourable members, if you can't see properly on the screen, just read your handout that you have, rather than that one. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, as well as the Honourable Minister Pando. And we are happy to have her back. She's been through the trenches at that time. And thank you very much, Minister, for coming back to us. And the department, DG, and other officials, DG, and other members present here. Our delegation comprises of myself, Temba Musia, the current chairperson of the CHE. And on my immediate left here is Professor John Mubangizi. He is the chairperson of the Higher Education Quality Committee, the HQC as we call it. He's a Dean of Law at the University of Free State. And on my right is the CEO, Professor Narayan Pechnath. Chairperson, without any further waste of time, I'll move on. We couldn't do the staff here get the technology right because they told me Parliament's wires are a bit archaic, they don't match the other computers, so we're sorry about that. The audit of the University of Zululand was performed mid last year. We have sent a full report, so this presentation may not have the detail of what you've seen there, and we'll be happy to respond to questions and take advice. But this was a special audit at the request of the minister to look into or assess the university, and particularly focus on the implementation of the recommendations of the administrator.
Professor, would you mind just speaking into the mic?
Yeah, into the mic?
Because
like
we can't hear you.
Like that? Okay, thank you.
You can lift the mic up.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Minister, as you take leave.
Yes. So we looked at the recommendations of the administrator, and so that we can provide a basis for the development going forward through an implementation plan. And clearly there must have been a reason for the minister then to request for this to happen. We have done this within the shortest possible time available to us. And just an overview, we have four commendations, and these are areas that signal that could be looked into as strengths or some kind of a worthy development that we acknowledge, because we know, in fact, we think that whereas the institution is facing many, many challenges, there are still some areas that can be salvaged going forward, but there are very few, it's only four of them that we discovered. And then we have 17 recommendations, and these are areas of worry, things that need to be done. They signal something that has to be given attention to improve the quality, because our focus is on quality arrangements for students and staff within institutions, of course, governance as well. And some of the administrator recommendations and the audit findings of 2010 of the HKC, and also we think that a number of these things since 2010 have not been sufficiently attended to. So new imperatives for quality improvement identified necessarily or necessitating a new improvement plan. So the institution must develop an improvement plan that must be monitored. And we noted that the university itself acknowledged some of the issues that require attention. And we have tried to incorporate this, and this should be in the quality assurance planning. And of course, with the necessary allocation of responsibilities and resources to implement them and monitor them. So that's what the implementation plan is supposed to reflect. And we'll continue an engagement to see that it happens. And of course, through the HEPC, we'll be monitoring these structures. And Chairperson and members, we thought at the time that we went, the university has a committed team, but inexperienced. This is what they expressed, that and most of them, as you know, are new in the positions, but they expressed commitment, and we think that's an area of management and planning that is a challenge and that needs to be addressed going forward, because when people are new in an environment like the University of Zululand, you really need to see how best you can support them to address the challenges. And I'm sure there are quite a number, as you know. And so we are cautiously optimistic, but we don't want to suggest that there cannot be an improvement, but we're cautiously optimistic that with time, you know, with the experience that could be developed and focus and commitment and the revision of plans and putting in hard work, the university can perhaps then project a positive project trajectory. But it doesn't come easy, as we all know. It depends on people and the support around. Because we also believe that the university plays a crucial role in the lives of many ordinary people in the province. But obviously how the university is run is a different matter, but for ordinary people who don't know challenges that those that run the university experience or problems that have been caused. But it plays a critical role for that part of the nation in the province and of course elsewhere. We know and we have discovered that even since after the audit that the university suffers a negative image, and all of these are in the public domain. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done to turn that around. And I think that is where the department and all the minister and yourselves and the portfolio committee will have to take decisive action to address those things. Just a bit of context, Chairperson, very quickly. The first bullet, I think what is pertinent, apart from the fact that the university is in a rural setting, is the serious challenges around student housing. And you know, that creates all kinds of problems, safety and security. So student housing is a serious problem. And of course staff as well. So just as a way of background, we looked at the CHE performed an audit in 2010 at this university, and shortly thereafter an assessor was appointed, the late Professor Hugh Africa, and I assisted Professor Africa at that time to do that assessment, which made a recommendation to the minister to appoint an administrator. And because there has been so much instability and lack of progress, the audit that was performed in 2010 by the CHE, we had to terminate it because we thought that a lot of those things were now, I mean, quite obsolete, and something new needed to happen at the time. And in 2017, the minister requested us to do that full assessment, as I've indicated. Just the profile of the institution. The university has just over 17,000 students, and 10% of which are postgraduate students. And an improvement from the statistics of 2010, where they had only 900 postgrads. In 2017, 4,347 students graduated, and they have a very ambitious strategic plan. And if you have an ambitious strategic plan with the many challenges that you face, it becomes a cause for concern. And their operational plan is quite detailed, as we saw it. And they have been submitting their annual reports and audited financial statements to the department in accordance with the reporting requirements. And the information before us has shown that they had an operational surplus for 2014 and 15, and reflected a positive cash flow for those 2 years. Just a summary of the commendations. We think the operative word here is the appointment of the executive leadership or senior team, because there's been a lot of instability in the past. Whereas we are conscious of the fact that when they're still new, given the magnitude of the challenges, it could be a very onerous task for them. But the leadership has been appointed, and they express their commitment to do what they're supposed to be doing there. And there was some progress made with the recommendations of the administrator, particularly strategic financial planning and management, and the workplace skills plan. And we saw that there was some work done there to assist staff to complete their PhDs. And the information before us, you know, when we look at documents, council and its committee appear to understand their role and responsibilities in the challenging higher education landscape. But of course, we did not sit in meetings of council to actually have further evidence of whether these things are truly happening. When the institution appears to be troubled as it is. On the recommendations, we think that members of management and council should be inducted properly by experienced people. We know that the department has a yearly training session for council members, particularly chairpersons and so forth. And the annual reviews, and that training is actually in collaboration with the University of South Africa. I'm one of the trainers that are requested to assist these people who actually understand their governance responsibilities. And the annual reviews of performance of council members are quite crucial, and you know also about the infrastructure and fiscal planning challenges there, which is what the department. So our concern is that we would like to see an environment conducive to teaching, learning and research, and we believe that this university used to be one of the great historically black universities at the time, and it had very good work coming out of it, and the faculty of law used to be one of the best. Now, we give attention to ensuring in alignment with institutional statute. We think that serious attention should be given to governance arrangements and mechanisms in terms of the applicable law. And it should be monitored, so the department needs to have that capacity to do that. Staff housing is a challenge because of the location of the university, and of course policies that they have, and many people don't quite stay there that should otherwise stay and contribute. They come and they go, they come and they go for very short periods of time. So the retention should be a strategy, a deliberate one, and recruitment as well. The labor relations are not good at the university, are not healthy, and you will get further details as we proceed, but the report clearly enunciates them. And a risk arrangement as well, and the planning needs serious attention because there are many risk areas, and we didn't see a very comprehensive strategy for risk assessment. The reputation of the institution needs very serious attention. So we believe that these are the some of the things that we came across. I will now request Professor Mubangizi to continue with part of the presentation before the CEO. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee. As the chair of the CHE has indicated, this is quite a lengthy report, and the best we can do here is really to highlight a number of things and point out salient issues. And I will begin by talking about the current state of governance at the university, in terms of which the audit panel found that the record shows a functioning council, which is constituted according to the university statute, of course. It meets regularly and is supported by properly constituted appropriate committees, and meets what would be the requirements of a council in terms of the Higher Education Act. The panel was also satisfied that council members and the executive team have appropriate, mutually respectful relationships between themselves. There was also no concern about the supportive working relationship between the council chair and the vice chancellor. Having said that, however, a number of concerns were raised, a number of issues were raised, particularly by the main labor union at the university, NEHAU, which indicated that, according to them, the university was in the same or worse position than it was when the administrator left in 2013, and that none of the administrator's remedial recommendations had been addressed. NEHAU presented about 32 specific allegations and concerns to the panel, and the panel took each one of these into account and considered them one by one on their own merit, taking into account the response from the university. Now, it has to be pointed out that NEHAU, as I said, is the UNISUL branch of NEHAU is the main union at the university, although unfortunately it only represents about 14% of the labor force. And again, unfortunately, the recognition agreement between NEHAU and the university seems to have lapsed in 2016. Nevertheless, it was a great concern to the audit panel that there had been a breakdown in relationship between the leadership of the university and the union. In that regard, the recommendation is that the university should take steps to ensure harmonious labor relations by facilitating adequate representation and restoring appropriate platforms for engagement between management and labor representation for negotiation and consultation on their interests and concerns. The next aspect that I want to talk about is in terms of assessing the university strategy. As the chair of CHE mentioned earlier on, the university has a very ambitious strategic plan. This is the strategic plan 2016 to 2021. Among other things, the university strategy identifies six priority areas, namely improving governance, creating a quality teaching and learning environment, enhancing research and innovation, enhancing the quality and profile of their graduates, developing ways to manage the national, regional, and international reputation of the university, and accelerating infrastructure development. Now, although the panel was satisfied that the university was able or had been able to develop the building blocks for a successful long-term strategy, the panel identified the gap in the university's model, namely the absence of a university risk register, which is linked to a risk management strategy so as to manage and monitor risks. And in that regard, we recommended that the university should develop and implement a risk register as part of the university's risk management strategy, which would enable reporting and monitoring of steps taken to manage identified institutional risks. The next aspect that I would like to touch on is the issue of enrollment management and the implementation of a revised academic structure. The audit panel heard from the registrar about the ITS implementation and the new graduation system, the new graduation system software, which was procured in 2016, which includes the capturing of all relevant data during that year. And an example of the impact of the system was that the university introduced online registration in 2017. The thorny issue of... Now, before I go to that, the panel was also informed and was provided with evidence of captured relevant data in 2017 and also the capture of progression rules onto the system. Now, having said that, there is the thorny issue of degrees for sale that was talked about a little earlier. It's not a secret that the university has suffered significant reputational damage because of reports of corruption in relation to its qualifications and the issue of degrees for sale, and that the student records, namely the official university record of student achievement, had been tampered with by corrupt university officials. Now, these of course have been widely reported in the media, as you know. The audit panel, however, was able to establish through documentation provided and also through interviews that desktop fraud had indeed occurred and had been dealt with by the university. And in its findings, the panel reached the conclusion that the university had addressed issues related to the integrity of its student record and its certification processes, and has put in place the checks necessary to ensure that this remains the case in the future. However, for a number of reasons, we recommended that the university should consider a strategy that will address issues of institutional reputation, and this will be based on goals and activities that will result in demonstrating progress and in the process promote a positive outlook for the university. There's also the issue of the Richards Bay campus. Now, the panel was able to establish that the development of that campus is a central component to the realization of the university vision to be a comprehensive university. And among other things, one of the aims is to have a broad spread of programs which are characteristic of a comprehensive university. Now, this, of course, the university envisages would enable them to enroll students in higher certificate in engineering, the diploma in engineering, BSc engineering, MBA, LLB, and continuous professional development short courses. However, the panel established that as far as the state of readiness is concerned, there has been insufficient progress in developing curricula for the new programs, and the strategies for pedagogy are yet to be developed or adopted. The new facilities based on an agreed pedagogical approach are also yet to be designed. As mentioned earlier, one of the concerns is, of course, that there are insufficient plans for student housing, which is an important aspect of institutional life. In that respect, The recommendation was that the university should give attention, urgent attention, to the issues that have been raised, that were raised by the panel, with respect to the Richards Bay campus, including accreditation of new programs, maximizing the use of facilities, and the development of appropriate strategies for teaching and learning. Now, I think at that point, having talked about teaching and learning, I'd like to hand over to the CEO to continue with the other aspects relating to the audit. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members. I think that the deep worry and concern of everyone flows from the protracted dysfunctionality at the university for the better part of a decade. And it's underscored by the recognition that this university serves among the poorest of the poor and some of the most marginal in our society. And what's common with the student body is that most of them come from a very rural background, and it's an area that generally lacks infrastructure, and because of the complexities of tribal land ownership, it's difficult to expand. That many of these students come from very poor families and who are resource poor, and in terms of the assumed cultural capital that many come into university with, that poses a challenge. Many of them are first generation students from the families. So they would also have come generally from under-resourced schools. So all of this compounds the problems and imposes a huge burden on the institution in order to ensure student success. So when the attention is diverted to all of the disequilibrium of experience and dysfunctionality, a protracted period of mismanagement and poor governance at the institution, it diverts attention from the core business of the institution. And that's what was top of the mind, a concern for the CHE and for the HEQC. And it's what the panel gave particular attention to. Now, the panel found that there are still serious issues related to capacity, serious issues related to whether there are adequate initiatives and adequate investment in infrastructure and facilities, and whether there's enough of a programmatic intervention to reach most of the students. The institution has appointed a deputy vice chancellor for teaching and learning. It's appointed professional staff who would provide the support to students and who would, in particular, promote student learning. And the university has also given attention to upskilling the professional capabilities of their staff. And there was very promising evidence of several staff, about two dozen of them, who completed the PhDs through one of the initiatives. And there was also evidence that the university had put in place a mechanism to identify at-risk students. So those are all positive, and they are all a step in the right direction. But the view generally was that much more needs to be done, and many of the initiatives are what we call in the quality assurance discourse wet paint, the wet paint syndrome. So many of the initiatives are just too fresh and have not made enough of an impact, and there isn't enough of a pervasive influence throughout the university and an impact on student success in particular, for us to be persuaded that enough has been done. And you would see therefore in the recommendation that has been made by the HEQC is that under the purview of the Senate of the university, that particular attention should be given to strengthening teaching and learning strategies and processes for student success, to also bring under scrutiny the number of learning programs offered, to review these, and then also to train the staff and students in the use of its online learning management system, because the view of the HEQC is that that offers an avenue to provide a compendium of support initiatives addressing individual student needs, and also making it pervasive right across the institution. I turn next, Chairperson, to student support and student counseling in particular. Capacity again was identified as existing capacity is quite severely stretched, and there's a new online process for allocating student accommodation to deal with that pervasive and persistent problem, and many students are vulnerable, students who depend on private accommodation in the environment, in the surrounds of the university, become victims of crime, petty crime. It emerges that, so where there's student accommodation in the immediate surrounding vicinity of the university, that there used to be a fence. And it seems that the students themselves were involved in breaking down the fences to, because they didn't like the idea of this biometric access system. So our view was that there needs to be a, because it's something that goes right back to the time of the assessor and the administrator. So it's been a pervasive problem that's not been given attention sufficiently. So there has to be a coordinated effort between the university administration, the local authority, the chiefs and so on, the police, and the students themselves, because you have to get the buy-in of the students as well in terms of any solution that's proposed. Otherwise, it really limits the, in fact, students can't even access the library at night because of the fear factor and insecurity in the immediate areas. And the other proposal was that the transport providers should also be brought in so that they can run a regular service from the university and the library and the residences to where the students are living. Another issue is related to the way in which students are represented and participate in the life of the university. That's been troubled, much as there's been troubled relations with labor. There's also been troubled relations with the student, organized student body. And although the university argues that it has made progress in regularizing that, there are contestations about that. So the panel was of the view that student committees should be set up to ensure that there's a student voice in the university structures, and that this should be done with genuine commitment to student participation in the governance of the university. Then we make a number of recommendations as far as that is concerned. That we recommend, firstly, that the university undertakes a student and staff climate survey as a practical initiative, to establish areas of student institutional culture improvement for both students and for staff, and then to put in place measures to address the challenges which are commonly identified. Then we also recommend that the university develop regular standards for the private accommodation facilities that are used by students in the village and the surrounding areas, and then to find ways to assist the providers to meet these standards, and that they must meet in particular the DHET norms as far as accommodation provision is concerned. And then we also recommend that the university take steps to create a conducive environment to work with the SRC within the roles and responsibilities specific to each, underpinned by transparency and mutual respect. And we turn next to the HR processes and labor relations. some of the challenges that were identified in the process of the audit was that there's been little continuity in HR leadership for a number of years. A large number of risk areas were identified by auditors, and there were several findings that flowed out of that process. And then it was observed with concern that several of the resolutions which had been taken by council had not been implemented, and there was a general paucity of HR policies and procedures, and some of those that had been put in place during the time of the administrator were contested or didn't have buy-in because of the labor and the union had not been appropriately consulted on these. So that also that's also contributed to the malaise as far as policies, HR policies and procedures that are in place. So the panel noted that the HR now has the requisite capacity, so it's able to give attention to all of these. It also has in place an equity plan that's been approved. It's got in place a performance management plan, and these are all steps in the right direction, but also quite fresh initiatives since the new management is in place. And we still have to see whether they are implemented and they are consistent, have done so consistently. I think we've said enough and we know enough about the labor relations, which are very strained at the university, huge polarization between the management and the staff. And it can be traced, well, the immediate polarization can be traced back to the 2016 strike, which was a protracted strike over 10 weeks. And then the recognition, in that period, the recognition agreement between the university and Nehao expired, and it led to Nehao's membership dropping below the threshold required for it to be recognized. And that led to a lot of suspicion and lots of accusations and allegations against the management in particular, that management had played a role in leading to the demise of Nehao. So the recommendation of the HEQC is that the university review its approach to trade union recognition that would allow for recognizing trade unions in defined bargaining units. The panel found that the positions are still very polarized, even at the time that they were there in June 2017, and they don't seem to be budging. So that's a real concern that there isn't a coming together or some rapprochement that would lead to a solution. So the particular area in which the university is located is quite high in crime, which impacts on students. Aside from petty crime, there's a lot of violent crime as well, poor lighting, and students being vulnerable walking to their places of residence. So the proposal then was that the university works with the traditional leaders in the immediate vicinity and the immediate community to provide a secure and safe environment for staff and for students. And then, as I've mentioned earlier on, to also negotiate with the transport providers to provide adequate and regular transport. And then the final recommendation we make in this regard, Chairperson, is that particular attention be given to the security concerns in relation to the students and the staff, and that the Mkhwanazi traditional authority, the Mshlatuze local authority, the MEC for safety and security in the province, and the National Commissioner of the SAPS be brought together to seek a solution to staff as well as student security. Thank you. I believe the chairperson will make the closing remarks.
Thank you once again, Honourable Chair members. Just in conclusion, we believe that the CHE will require regular and detailed institutional reports so as to monitor how the university implements the recommendations and on all of these issues that we have highlighted and more, of course. And we also believe that just receiving regular reports would not assist much, so we would have to have site visits to actually monitor the progress on the ground, especially the institutional climate conducive to conducting the core business of the university. And of course, all the action imperatives identified in this report to be distilled in a very detailed manner to formulate an improvement plan. A plan that will be very clear with deliverables, actions, timelines, and all of that, and allocation of resources. We also believe that the university management, and including council, are asked to give resolute attention to and commitment, you know, to address all of these challenges facing the university. And the one-year time frame, we believe, is reasonable to show demonstrable progress. And lastly, it has been in the public domain, in the portfolio committee, we are aware, we read all the documents related to the Invest of Zululand, including all the media statements. Even up to last night, we are receiving some of these things related to the university. We believe that the minister has the office that has requested for this, and of course the portfolio committee, need to look at this. We work within the audit remit that we're given, but we believe that Section 42 of the High Education Act should be invoked to actually intervene with a directive of some kind to address all of these things as a matter of agency. Since we had performed the audit, we are aware that there has been further developments there at the university that do not show an upward trajectory as we had anticipated, but a deterioration of some sort. And we believe that we and the department and everyone else should be able to salvage the education of these innocent students that go to university seeking good education and are derailed by all the kinds of machinations within the university. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to the representatives of the CHE for the presentation yesterday. Honourable members, I'm going to ask you to ask questions. You may wish to ask clarifications and so on, also on what are being made. Killian and Bazzoli, Kekana, number 3, Tunu, number 4. Those are the hands that I see at this point. Honourable Killian.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the report by CHE. Chair, can I just say that if I look back over the past year and a half, I do have a very serious concern. I understand the scope of the investigation and the audit of the CHE. However, when we have engaged with the institution, we on several occasions Chairperson, over the past year and a half, we as a committee have engaged on several occasions with the institution. And whereas your audit has listed some commendations about improvement, etc., it is clear that there are vast areas that we have not seen significant improvement. As we speak now, Chairperson, the university is closed and no studies are being conducted at the institution. We have students that have damaged property, apparently, and they are to appear in court. We've had a very bad relationship with staff at the institution. There were protests, etc., and some of the staff members were instructed to report back for duty on Monday morning. So currently, Chair, no studies are being conducted at the institution. So this warrants immediate intervention. I have seen the latest, the recommendation on the conclusion document on slide 24, and I would strongly support that in terms of the Higher Education Act section 42, we have intervention by the minister in the institution by way of a ministerial directive. Chair, and I now just wanted to come back to one or two questions on the presentation. You see, if we have this institution that is servicing a very poor area and is actually the only step up in the rural area of KwaZulu-Natal where it is situated, it's very sad indeed that you have such vast reputational damage of the institution through fraud, which was conducted, desktop fraud, and the sort of action taken. Could the CHE just tell us what type of action did the institution take? Were people criminally charged? Because for too many institutions, consequence management consists of a disciplinary hearing and a warning, and people disappear and just to pop up somewhere else in the public service. We have to understand, Chair, that this institution depends very largely on public financing. And therefore, it would be important for us to know, if you say the Richards Bay campus is a very important part of its university strategy going forward, but on slide 14, you're saying insufficient plans for student housing. What is the situation? Is there any budgetary provision for student housing made? Is the department aware of anything of that nature? And what is the rollout plan for that? Because clearly, you can have the most comprehensive institutional plans without it being sort of incorporated into implementation plans. It will just remain a pipe dream. It will not materialize, Chairperson. So I have a very serious concern about that. Then, I do not for the life of me can I see that with so many risks that there is not a risk register at present. And I feel perhaps the CHE is going softly on the major challenges at the institution. Perhaps we should read between the lines of the report that actually in fact highlighted this clear deficiency in their plan. You cannot manage funds without a risk strategy, and that needs attention. And then, Chairperson, if we go back on allegations made by the union said they had the necessary numbers in terms of union membership, but there was an active effort by the management to in fact ensure that their numbers go down. and consequently they only represent 14% of the workforce. Was there any sort of further questioning about the reasons for the dwindling numbers of the union membership? Also, as far as the general comment made by the CHE, that you on slide 6 say that the council and its committees demonstrate an understanding of their roles and responsibilities. I think to some extent we get conflicting messages, because what you've highlighted as serious shortcomings indicate the contrary. It appears that the roles of the different institutions of the university is not clearly understood. There's not accountability, and clearly that is a matter of grave concern, because, Chair, we don't have time. It says here on slide 3 that, we must, and the rest of the presentation, that we must give it a year to roll out. We don't have a year. So therefore, I would like to say that we need an immediate intervention. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Bazoli. Thank you, Member.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks to the CHE for all the hard work they did on this. My point is that the CHE is a very important body, and the HEQC. The reason why is that they are an independent body. They are not the department. And therefore, what they say about how our university works must be critical and must be on point. Because if universities want to defend their autonomy, they must listen to the CHE. The CHE, in a way, is the defense against departmental interference in universities. The universities have set up this body which will look at how they behave and how they perform on behalf of the public, not on behalf of the department. And therefore, the CHE has an obligation to be as critical and on point as it possibly can be, or the department will then have to step in the case of a failing university. And I've read this report, and I don't find it critical and on point enough. It seems to me it focuses mainly on plans and how you need more plans, on structures and how you need better structures. It doesn't get to the absolute essence of the problems at the university, which we've seen. It doesn't have any kind of sort of section in it which takes the experience of being at the University of Zululand from the point of view of the student. And I went through the report with that in mind, and I thought, okay, if I was a student, this is what I would arrive at. A university that has little student support, because they said it was short of staff. It has not enough housing. It has not enough lecturing staff. It has courses whose quality is definitely in question. Two of its degrees have been suspended. It has a Richards Bay campus which is clearly not developed and not particularly friendly to students. It is dangerous to one's life. There is huge risk of criminal intervention. And you have to decide yourself when or not you're ready to graduate. It looks like an awful place to be at, actually. But because your report is focused on structures, it's a very managerialist report, focused on the management structures, which is fine and good and important, you don't get a complete picture of what an awful place this must be for students. And to me, if you did that, you would end up with a far more pointed and critical report. Then the other area in which I feel that the CHE has not been critical enough is in the reputational issues. Now, you say the university has had a hugely bad press. There are a lot of reputational issues which come back again and again and again, and some of them have been dealt with, and that is not fair that they keep coming back. One of which is the degrees for sale, which you clearly show has been dealt with, although no criminal cases have yet come to court. From what I can see, charges have been laid, and that's probably about as much as the institution can do. But when it comes to something like the staff housing for the Vice Chancellor and Deputy Vice Chancellors. You really let them off the hook by saying, well, it came to council, but they didn't recuse themselves. Shame, they should have done a bit better. That's not good enough. This seems to have been a flawed decision, and the university needs to do something about it. Maybe charging those people some rent would go some way. You can't knock the houses down, but you can maybe make some gesture towards rectifying it. The same goes with housing, with problems with the foundation. You say the foundation looks to me like a little bit of a junket that people are on in this foundation, and nothing's been done. The union relations seem to be disastrous. The FRC relations may have improved. I think they may well have improved, but they looked at the time to be a problem. So it seems to me what you've got here, if you look at Walter Sisulu and the University of Zululand together, and these are the two most troubled universities in the country, what has happened to these two? And I have a theory about it. My theory is that both of them were built in a homeland under the Bantustan policy, where there was the kind of mythical idea that an economy would develop within that homeland, that Umtata would be the capital, that there would be businesses coming in there, that there would be bureaucracy developing there. And with the ending of the homeland policy, thank heavens, the theory behind the building of these two universities has collapsed. They actually have no real rationale for existence. They have no proper hinterland. They don't have an economy within which they are bedded. They are in deserted and poverty-stricken and crime-ridden areas. And there is a very good argument to close these universities. They are anachronistic. They are built in a period where there was a Bantustan policy. There are no more Bantustans. They will never recover from that. There is an argument to be made that these universities really are not sustainable where they are. Perhaps the University of Zululand could work to move to Richards Bay, where there actually is an economy, and make its home in a place where it's viable. But it seems to me that it's not really viable. Just one more point on knocking down the fences. Our experience at Walter Sisulu was that it wasn't so much the students knocking down the fences. It was the students in cahoots with criminals and squatters who wanted to use the university as a base from which they could commit crimes and gain sort of benefits from being on the campus. That's who knocked down the fence. And in fact, leaving the fence down only encourages and nurtures the criminality on the campus. But you don't make any recommendation to rebuild the fence. So your report is, I really have to say, it's mealy-mouthed. It doesn't get to the heart, and it does not say what needs to be said. Mealy-mouthed. It's an English phrase. Well, you should be. So it's too soft, is what I'm saying. And really, we need to be proud of the CHE. We need the CHE to be a body that will really stand up for excellence and quality and hammer it where it doesn't exist. And instead, it just talks about, oh, you need a plan here and you need a little bit of, you know, this there. Thank you.
Chair, I must start off by saying I'm comparing the, just in terms of affordability, the presenters. I thought there was something wrong with the system, but I hear the two ladies that presented now, Julie and Professor Belinda Bosoli.
Honorable Killian, not Julie.
She doesn't mind, Chair.
The rules does mine.
Okay, the two ladies are clear. I could hear each and every word. But the presenters, I could hear, but not all the words, to be honest. So please, when you answer questions, speak into the mic because really you didn't come out very clear in terms of audibility. The first debate is the one that Honorable Professor Belinda Bozoli raised. The debate that indeed these universities were built according to homelands and they are in poverty-stricken reserves and they rather be moved. My own position would be indeed, well, we know that they were built there for a political reason and to justify separate development. But now that they are there, and remember that we can't just take all universities to where the economy has developed, because what about those areas that are not developed? We need to develop them one day. And who's going to develop them if you don't build? I think we must take advantage and twist this threat into an opportunity. Because the most important thing is that our people are there. They live there in big populations. And somebody has got to take care of them. The old system knew people were there. They built these universities because we are not supposed to be in the urban area. Blacks did not have universities in the urban area. If they wanted university, they should go to the homeland and the rural area. That was the thinking. But now that our people are there, and this is the phase we are in, we need to develop those areas. This urban and rural inequality, it doesn't benefit everybody in the country. Because those reserves, those rural areas, like I've said, we need to develop their agriculture, we need to develop their infrastructure. That's why we have taken electricity there, we're doing tarred roads which needs civil engineers to build, give them houses where necessary, water, tap water, because in the past even tap water was not there. So we need all this social amenities to develop them. And therefore, even the economy ultimately, remember the economy doesn't develop if it isn't underpinned by a strong infrastructural facilities. Like I said the other time, the CEO of this world don't drink their water straight from the river. They want tap water. And for nature, you can't point at the big tree in the bush. They want flushing toilet and all this. So you can't invite them there to come and develop the economy if those facilities are not there to start with. So we're talking about people, and because they are people, we must develop. The second point is on the presentation that you made. Or when I heard that the university, UniZulu, has engineering, I felt my heart beating very nicely, because this is what I like. I want the scientists, because if we don't have them here in South Africa, in Africa, we can't develop. If they are there, you know they will ultimately develop. But then my excitement was shot down immediately when I heard people are buying certificates. Now, if you're going to produce engineers and you're not sure whether the certificate is bought, they'll do a tar road next thing, the truck passes there and it peels off immediately. So this thing of buying certificate is shocking. And indeed, I think you must explain to us what happened to the people who are doing it. Have they need to be uprooted. Actually, if possible, I don't know what the Act says about this type of behavior, they must never be allowed in their lecturers to lecture in any other university in South Africa. They would rather go to other employment in private sector maybe. But I think we should really get rid of these people. You also spoke about, okay, when you present, I also don't hear about the vice chancellor. She's the head. And if you would say she's not the part of your mandate in terms of reference, I would say, I mean, how do you investigate a big institution like that without starting with the head? I mean, she's the supreme, in a sense, supreme authority there. A lot of things happen under authority. And you can't clear and do a cleanup if you don't look at the vice chancellor also. But so little I did, like I said, I wasn't hearing, I couldn't hear all the words, but I don't think you paid, if you spoke about it, you paid enough emphasis on the role and what needs to be corrected with the vice chancellor. Lastly, the students. You know, university is there because of students. And when we were there in our oversight, there were splinter groups, two groups actually. And I was sent in the forefront by the chair to go. When I arrived there, the principal was with another group, and that group was helping her with the police to chase the second group, the first group, out of the campus, out of the meeting, actually. And we had our own fight. Why do you chase people out of, this is not your meeting, this is our meeting as members of parliament. We want to hear everybody. Now, we don't hear you speaking much about these divisions of students. Students have taken each other to court, and court proceedings are continuing with students debating and accusing each other as to who is legitimate. The last time, actually, when they came here, we were told in 2 weeks a legitimate SRC will be appointed. And we don't know how far that has gone, because university is about students, ultimately. So these are the kind of things that I don't think you can make any investigation without talking about, because if you exclude student, vice chancellor, then who are you investigating? But the real disappointment after I've heard about engineering, and like I said, and I was excited, is this one of certificate being sold. Please tell us how you have uprooted it so that it become a precedent even in other universities. Anybody who's tempted can never try it, because I think if we allow it, we'll destroy this nation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think I share the same sentiments with my colleagues in the fact that we thought that the report would, in a way, clear misunderstandings that were there and assist us in bringing back the normality at the institution. But at the same time, I'm of the view that at the University of Zululand, the atmosphere is very polarized, and even for the outside bodies, it becomes difficult for them to find the truth and be able to come at a good recommendation that will assist us in moving forward. That is the problem that I have. Because there are people that are outside that were expelled, who still have a lot to do with the university. Inside, there are also stakeholders that are at loggerheads. So in that way, one understands the difficult position that a CHE finds itself in. But I was hoping that we would hear more, because there were a lot of allegations, especially against the VC. And we had requested as the committee that an investigation be conducted in order for us to understand her suitability to hold office. But I didn't hear much of that in what has been presented, but it might be that it was not falling within their terms of reference. Some of the things that were there, it was the 11.5 million that went missing from the institution's account. Because in this report, to be honest, I think it must be something which helps us clear misunderstandings. There is this challenge, this is what we found, these are the findings, this is the recommendation. The things that we've heard that were not done right or that were not conducted correctly at the institution. So part of that is not reflected in the report. I don't have a problem with what is reflected in terms of safety and security and the VC having a bodyguard or some security because of the condition, one can understand. But in the main, the university community was complaining about the exorbitant fees that were paid to a certain company which was providing security. That is also part of the things that should have been clarified, because it is these wrong things that the community, not only in the university, that makes even the outside community to have a negative view of what is happening at the University of Zululand. If we clear those misconceptions, it will assist us so that they know that this is not what is happening at the institution. Because it is portrayed as that there is there is corruption, there is debt, there is, you know, there are so many things which are not done correctly. I was hoping that the report will also speak on those things. On the case of Richards Bay, I think Honorable Gegana has, I agree with him fully, that we do not want our institutions to be where economic hubs are, but we do want them to be in our rural areas so that they are seen as sunshine, as a beacon of hope, so that there can be development. Our children grow up, because that one is just in a rural area. If we can improve on governance and the management of the institution, that is what we need, so that it becomes what an institution where young people would aspire to be. So that is my take on the institution. Let us develop them, let us improve, but also take a note of what I accept what you have said in your recommendations, but not what was proposed by my colleague. On the degrees for sale, honestly, this one is not telling us what consequences should be taken for those who have done wrong in this matter, because this is one of those thorny issues. Chair, lastly, I would like to hear what the department's response is to this report, and also urge that we should take an agent intervention, as Honorable Killian has said, because that is what is required in this institution. Thank you, Chair.
Those are the only hands that I see at the moment. May I echo the sentiments of the other members as it relates to the report. It will help if you tell us what was your brief, because we might be asking you things and then the brief says something else, but we hammer you on something else. So if you can clarify that one for us, and I think it will help us to see what other recommendation we would want to make as it relates to that. But I think what is important, if you look at what the legislation says, the Higher Education Act says, it places responsibilities on certain institutions in this instance, the universities. So whilst you say something about that, but what we don't hear clearly is that the council is up and running. The numbers are full, each one has got a job, and the council is functioning optimal. But now, if the council is functioning optimal, why do we have the rest of the slides that you have in your presentation? So let's go to the heart of it. Who has the responsibility at the institution, legally? Other than the department, the minister, and whatever, what does the law say? Why do we not have many slides on the council in your outcome? Because the members say, now what about the vice-chancellor in here? That's their job, the council. If the committees of the view that the vice-chancellor, in our report we said already that we have a query around the fitness of the vice-chancellor to hold office. We can make that recommendation, but where is the power that has to effect that? And that's why I'm asking, do you really feel comfortable that you have done enough around the council? Because it doesn't come across in here. And surely the council would have screamed by now to say, look, really, we can't anymore, we're not given anything. This is our package that we would like to put onto the table to assist and support the institution. And then the other institutions that are there at the university and at all the other universities, of course, the institutional forum. Now, what are they doing? Are we just having them for the sake of having them? Or are they functioning optimally? Is this a useless thing that we have in the law? Or have we not paid sufficient attention to this institute? Because some of the issues that we raise, we don't hear you referring that to that structure also, or that the structure is functioning or not functioning. I know people serve many times on both. You know, they're in the council, they're in the IR, and so on. I don't hear much around it. I think the members have said a lot about the... I don't think the member that asked about the SRC, I don't think they're functioning at the moment. But I think what was extremely worrying was that the autonomy of the different stakeholders that are at the university. So some of it you raise and you talk about the relationship and so on. But I think it was rather painful to see a group of young people saying, we pledge our allegiance to this because she paid for us to go to the court. It was said to us in the meeting, these things. And then the other lot says, no, you keep quiet because we are the real one. And then we asked them, how did you? Well, eventually we had to put them out of our meeting. We didn't get anywhere with both of them. And then we had the the other stakeholder, which is then the union also. And the big worry is, if you look at all the different stakeholders that are there and you look at the role and function of all of them, you saw them all being involved or in one or other thing, and many of it is not their business. Who has got what function really didn't come across at all. And I think those things have to be said, because not only for this university, for other universities also, these roles must be much clearer, and everyone has to understand what role they have to play. You can't decide the functioning of the executive is mine as the student, or mine as the union, or anyone else out there. Those things are important to point out and to say what remedy needs to be in there. The other areas that you raise, we don't hear you saying. There are some areas that the university is not going to be able to fix. And that is, how do we bring in an intergovernmental aspect that can address the other issues? Like we have said to UWC, who's also got a huge crime area surrounded with a lot of criminal problems. What do we say to the responsible ministry in this instance that has to address that? Because you can't give a bodyguard to one person and the other, how many did you say? 17,000, however many they are, 17,000, they are all, don't have any protection. It doesn't make sense. Of course, they will target one person that has got a bodyguard, and all of them lives are in danger. So I raise that, and the other list that you have said also, we think that in the recommendation must be, how do we bring together the different people that hold the responsibility of making sure that they get water, that their roads get fixed, that they do all the other things. I agree, we can't punish them for being in the rural area. But we must learn the lesson from the fact that, you know, calls were made to close down Fort Hare. You instituted a different leadership, and slowly but surely some problems are being addressed, and there are still a myriad of issues there, but you can see there's a glimmer of hope, at least. We must never punish rural people and rural areas. I want to suggest, honourable members, we accept the minister has come into office last week, I think, and that the minister must obviously be given an opportunity to go through all the things that the committee has said also. We want to encourage you, DG, just to take our reports again. In any event, the speaker has referred them to you on our recommendations that has been made as a committee. And that the minister must be given an opportunity to also engage with the CHE report, but also engage on the comments that the members are expressing. I get the impression there's unanimity amongst the members that we feel that your report has not gone far enough, that it's not dealing with the heart and the pulse of a range of different issues. The one member said it's very, what, managerial? Okay, she called it other things also, Mickey Mouse. I said Mickey Mouse. we feel that if we seriously want to turn things around at the university, there needs to be two things. The one part is this, an immediate intervention, which is not yours, which is the department. Now, if it's true that the university is not functioning at the moment, we don't need a year to get it to function. If you have an answer to us, DG, or DDG Parker, if you can confirm to us whether the university is closed at the moment or functioning, that is not for the CHE. That is the department that must. all the things that I think you said, Honourable Killian, which are immediate things, must be separated from the CSE report, and we need to be updated on what the current situation is. Whatever we say and do here is about teaching and learning at that institution, whatever we call it, whether it's the SRC, whether it's the council, whatever. All of what we say, we want to bring back learning and teaching. We want the development of the young black child in South Africa and other races, and we want we want to make sure that we liberate that young child to take its place rightfully in this society. We don't see much of that at the moment. So I'm suggesting, one, there's the CHE report. No, a year is not going to. A year, it can't be a year, because they ignored in 2010 a report. Boom, go away. We don't want to hear about it. They didn't let you in there properly also, isn't that so? And then they also ignored some other directives that were given to them. Now, the idea of giving anyone a luxury year to say, look, let's just feel if our mood by May picks up and we're serious about it, is problematic. Because, by the way, we've got to pump money into this thing. Pump money into this institution. And we're giving them a siesta to carry on like that. We cannot agree with that part at all. So what needs to be done? The immediate things, but secondly, a faster intervention that will allow the university to be brought back onto. So all of those things about, you know, how much students they have, and whether all of these other things is not helpful. I think that one of you, or many of you, need to own up and have the guts to really confront yourself to the real issue at the university. We have done that in South Africa. We elected a new president. Why can't you follow Parliament and say, or deal with the real issue that is there? And the real issue has to do with the fact that when you entrust human beings to lead anywhere, at some point when we see that that leadership is not taking you anywhere, then you have to not talk about, you know, the report seemed to be very sexy, maybe that. No, that stuff is not going to take us anywhere. That report you're referring to is in fact not going to happen unless you deal with the real issue that is at hand. So many questions has been put. Let's see how we can deal with the answers, and then we'll conclude from there. You want to come in, did you? No?
No, Chair, but the question that was asked, I don't know whether we should respond to that or not.
So, we'll come back. Let's go back to the CHE.
Thank you once again, Chairperson, and members for the critical questions and comments. I think what I can say right up front is that we acknowledge the fact that we were not possibly critical enough in this report. We can't deny that. The process, as we had outlined it, is such that we select a panel to represent us based on the mandate. In this case, was a special audit, and the report comes to the HEQC and then finally to Council. And Honourable Bazoli will remember when due respect. I think she chaired one of the audits way back. Now, the criteria that we use is very specific in how we write our reports and things like that. But what we acknowledge is that, based on the discussions which I chaired in the council, both Professor Mala Singh and I and a few other members who have been at the beginning of this business acknowledged that we could have been much more critical. So I take that point. I'm not going to take it any further than that. And yes, we have said that there are structures in place, because they were not in place and not functioning in the past. We can't deny that there are structures. How they actually function when we are not there, we can't comment much about that, except that when you have a structure, you see that there's an agenda, there's a meeting, there are issues that have been addressed, and so on and so forth. Perhaps that's where the blaring comes in. We know that the issue of the degrees for sale at the University of Zululand has got a long history, and in the number of instances that I'm aware of, it has been tried to address it as much as possible. But in this particular instance, the staff members responsible were charged and dismissed. Whether there were other criminal charges and things, we can't confirm that. But when I say it has a history, when the minister appointed an assessor way back in 2010, I was in that team, and I investigated that matter specifically because I was a university registrar at the time, so I knew exactly where to look. And in the interviews with the registrar then, and also looking at documents and systems and things, it was very clear that things were not right in the first place. Just as an example, there were three piles of certificates in his office. Another pile was blank. Another one had a seal, you know, this university seal that you put on a certificate, and the other one had signatures in advance. So you could insert names of people there and collect money, could do all sorts of things. It was very porous. But that registrar was dismissed once the administrator took over. So I think there are remnants of people at the university who actually see that as business, and yes, there must be more decisive action taken for them to actually be punished for what they do. We, about the immediate intervention, the CHE does not have a problem with that. Well, what we are saying is, if you have constructed an improvement plan, it takes the time to work on it. But if you have immediate problems, as it appears to be the case at the university, yes, you have to act immediately and address them. So we acknowledge the fact that, things are not going as they should at the university. I'm not aware that there is now a functioning SRC at the university, because we confined our reporting to what we did last year. There could have been developments. But when we were there, there was an administrator. That's what we're reporting about. And that obviously doesn't work well. So I also wish to comment about, what Honorable Bozoli says about the state of some of the universities that are geographically located in such a way that there is no support and infrastructure and water systems and so forth. Having looked at both universities in the past, I chaired an audit there a number of years ago. I was not the chairman of the CHE then. And the problems that we see today date back many years. For example, we discovered that just about 40% of the staff qualifications at the time were very suspect. And the issue of student housing and things like that has been a perennial problem, because facilities get broken down and so on and so forth. So it is, of course, the department's mandate to see how they can make stronger interventions. But we all know that administrators have been appointed numerous universities. I have been one at TUT, and if you can last for 2 months there, then you have a thick skin. So it becomes very chaotic. So I think something really at a bigger level needs to be done to turn around these institutions where the innocent students are being robbed of the education that they deserve, and especially with the public resources invested in them. So the polarized atmosphere in this campus, that's a very serious thing that Honorable Mkhunda says, because the sense that we had at the CHE was the dominance, of course, and the closing of ranks between the chairperson of council and the vice chancellor. So in order for us to actually speak to each and every one of these people, given the timelines that we have, or we can't go and select students or staff that should come, the institution should give us these people, they can give us anyone. So there are all of those dynamics that go with this business. But yes, there must be interventions, and yes, the minister should apply her mind and do what needs to be done. And much of what we reported focused on, did they do something about the improvement, the administrators' recommendations. I will leave my other colleague to respond to some of the specific questions, because I don't want to respond to everything alone. They know the issues as well.
Thank you, Chair. I'll make a few comments in relation to the questions that have been asked. Although I think our chair has kind of touched on most of the issues, I think the chair of the portfolio committee made an important point earlier regarding the brief that we were given. So that has to be seen as one of the limitations that we were faced as a committee. I mean, you can conduct numerous investigations into the University of Zululand, or you can conduct a detailed investigation into the University of Zululand. That was not our brief. Our brief was to conduct an assessment of the university, the extent to which the implementation of the recommendations of the administrator had been carried out, and to give a basis for the development of the university or development of an institutional improvement plan. That is very limiting. That's one. Two, our limitations are also reflected in the approach we are required to take in terms of legislation and policy, which is a quality assurance approach. Now, I recall Honorable Kekana, and this is no disrespect to what he was trying to say, used the word investigation 5 times. We are not required conducting an investigation in the true meaning of the word investigation. Now, in view of the issues that have been raised, okay, I refer to also Honorable Mukunu, I think, mentioned something about that we actually don't say anything about the suitability of the Vice Chancellor to hold office. That is not a detail that this report can take us into, because in order to determine that, you would have to undertake another specific process, like is done with the SOEs and so on, to determine the suitability of someone to be a chairperson or a CEO of a company. That requires more detail. And also, there is an element that I pick up which says that, you know, we've heard this in the media. We've read about this. There are these kind of allegations, but your report has said nothing about them. Now, we were not mandated to go and investigate specific allegations raised in the media or in public domain, because a number of references to criminality are actually raised in the questions that have been asked. But what that requires is a forensic or criminal investigations for which we have no resources or mandate to conduct. Now, so specifically speaking, I think there was an issue on, I think from Honorable Killian, about what is presently happening at the university and so on and so forth, and I think someone has already replied to that. That cannot be in our report, but what it tells us is that it has its genesis in the problems that we capture in the report. And I agree with everybody else that the interventions related to that should be immediate, because they are dealing with an immediate situation with or without the report. Now, there was also another question, I think, about the relationship between the, you know, labor formations, the unions and the university, and why the numbers have dwindled and why there is this relationship. Obviously, that is at the core of the issue, where the relationship between the university and, I mean, the university management and the most important stakeholders are completely broken down. We mentioned that in the report. The issue of the labor, how, for example, the fact that they have not renewed their recognition agreement with the university, the fact that the SRC is non-existent, and at least at the time of the report of the audit, with the only SRC administrator who cannot do what the SRC is required to do, and as a result of those fractured relationships, the numbers of the unions have dwindled, because the relationship is fractured. I will not talk about the issue of the geographical location of the university, political implications and socio-economic implications. I think people have already spoken sufficiently about that, because you know that's the nature of our society, that's the nature of our history. We can't have all our higher education institutions in urban areas, because that would not be not only politically incorrect, but also socio-economically and historically probably incorrect. So I also agree with the proposition that the department should look at the report, should look at the situation, and use whatever legislative and the policy authority they have to act and do something about this. As we suggested, I think when we were concluding, a ministerial directive is called for, and I'm happy that some of the members here have supported that. So that's why we leave it for now. I think maybe the CEO might have something to add. Thank you.
If I may, Chair, I think it's very important to be mindful of the timeline of this special audit. So we received the notification from the Minister in September 2016. Then we started the process of identifying the panel and putting together the expert panel. That took us the next month or two. We also had to wait for the transfer of the resources which we got from the department, because we didn't have the resources, had not budgeted or planned for this audit. Then we had the first engagement with the university towards the end of January 2017. And that period between the first engagement with the university, the mobilization of the panel, all of the necessary documentation which we got from the institution and which we had at our disposal in terms of the reports and so on. Then we developed the lines of inquiry and the lines of analysis. And that's based on what was at our disposal. And as my colleagues have pointed out, influenced heavily by what the scope was. Now, many of the issues that surfaced and have been raised here as well flowed from the portfolio committee's own engagements at the institution. We are aware also of the department's own visit to the institution led by the DG, where they found particular concerns and raised them. But the key thing is that what influenced our approach, inquiry, and focus was in that critical period between January 2017 and June when the panel visited. Now, the first serious allegations that came to our attention from the portfolio committee were from the report of your engagement in September 2017. So much as those were serious concerns, they really couldn't influence because the horse had kind of already bolted. So we couldn't, when the report had already been finalized, serve to our processes. And much as the chairperson has pointed out that we found all kinds of flaws with the report and about the representations there and about whether they were strongly enough stated. We had already gone there, already completed the report. So much has come out ex post facto, and some of the issues, as Professor Mubangizi has pointed out, actually require a different kind of investigation. A quality audit is actually a blunt instrument to reveal the truth, and other members have pointed it out. When there are such serious allegations, you actually need a forensic investigation. You need other kinds of expert investigation which are not within the capabilities of a panel. So that's the first point. The second is in terms of specific questions raised by Honourable Killian about the sufficiency of the plans for student housing. What's in place and what was identified was that the universities acquired a whole lot of urban around the Richards Bay facility. They've got very ambitious plans to build I think it's a 2,300-bed facility for the students and so on. But we've discovered from the department that they don't even have any funds committed, that there aren't funds available. So that's why we say, well, your intentions are good. You're looking at creating the facility to deal with a particular problem, but there's such a long road to travel in terms of getting that facility in place. And the point is taken about the risk register. That was pointed out in the actual report. The necessity for it not only to receive and consider the risk register, but to also act on the imperatives that have been identified. And then all that 11.5 million rand that went astray, there's a detailed footnote in the report that addresses that about the weakness it's identified. 9 million rand of that has been recovered. The insurance company paid 2 million rand, so the net loss of the university is around 600 million rand. And then the university provided persuasive evidence that they put in place a mechanism to deal with that, with having two people sign off so that they prevent a recurrence of that. So, Chair, there are lots of other specific questions, but I thought of to conclude with just answering Honourable Bazoli as well on the mealy-mouth nature of the report. We take the criticism, but remember that we don't set out, because it ultimately can end up as a public document, we are quite temperate in the language that we use in how we characterize the problem. So we use soft language and temperate language quite deliberately. When we engage the institution for the improvement plan, I think the chairperson did allude to this, we're actually very harsh on them. So you'll find in the history of it, this university's relationship with the CAG, we have not accepted their plan, we've not accepted their reports, we've rejected them outright because we thought they were rubbish. And so we take the same stance, and we take a very hard line. And the chairperson has actually already suggested we should, in addition to the receiving the plan, we should do regular site visits. I know the department has in mind as well to do regular site visits, but they can speak about that. So we will be very hard line, because with all of the other issues that have arisen from the portfolio committee that have come to the attention of the minister and to the department, they are very serious concerns that we can't turn a blind eye to and can't go softly on with the institution. So that assurance we give you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Dr. Parker? Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. I suppose, in the main, what we are about, and specifically the Council on Higher Education, in respect to this particular matter, was the question of whether the institution is failing the parents who sent their students to study at UNISULU or not. And if that is the case, what could be the causal factors in respect to the operations and the activities of the institution in their totality? Because the administrator's report, specifically the handover report, identified quite specifically the areas that require further attention, of which, if nothing is done about them, the institution is likely to slide back. This then, the request to CHE, was actually to look as to whether the institution has been able to live up to the recommendations of the handover report of the administrator. And if not, what could be the constraining factors, whether they may be objective or subjective? But nonetheless, we got the report, we looked at it. We had a sense when we were discussing, perhaps in a number of areas, it could have gone a bit further, because the defining feature of an institution is teaching and learning, research. And if in that area an institution is not performing well enough, then it doesn't work. Anything in respect to its mandate, having failed to fulfill. So we've looked at the report, and we are working on what we think could be recommended for the minister's consideration on the matter. of which that will conclude quite very soon. And I think all what we are requesting is that all of us quality assurance bodies, we just need to step up in defense of our institutions for the benefit of society. That's the long and short of it. And at every step of the way, there is somebody to account. And that accountability would need to be enforced at all times. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. On the claim that is made, whether the institution is closed at the moment?
It's about the issues of the institution in respect to the allowances. So we're told that the allowances, monies for allowances, have been made available to the institution by NSFAS. So perhaps internal methods of distribution, or maybe students, what has been indicated, they want more than what they are getting. We haven't been ascertained as to whether it's really about the question of entitlement, or there are real issues in respect to that. There are some officials who have assigned to follow up on the issue to get the actual facts. But students were given allowances. It looks they are not satisfied about the amount they are given.
Honourable members, one or two questions, and then we can conclude. Is there anyone that wants to kick on? I see your hand is up. On the West Station, I see your hand up. No? Killian, I see your hand is up. And Honourable Mabunda, the three of you.
Can I go, Chair? Yes, no, I just want us not to miss something important or even overshadow it, that the black rural universities have come made by, so far they've made a tremendous contributed well Pido to this society. Teflop, which now has even the medical school, Venda, which now has an engineering Venda, when they had a problem, they had a peaceful, when we did an oversight, peaceful protest. But you could see that these people are taking advantage of this institution to better their lives. It's an opportunity, maybe the one and only, to better their life far, far, far away from civilization, quote unquote. Right? And other universities, University of Phuthatswana, Kwakwa, University of Fort Hare, that produce a lot of leaders, Mandela, Tambo, Mugabe, Uncle Bob there in Zimbabwe, you know. So you can see in the history of the development of this backward and underdeveloped Africa, they've made a big, big contribution. We couldn't have done without. And you know, the other day when we were debating this issue, Professor Bozoli said, students that come from university are, we like saying there's unemployment 7 or 10%, and she reversed that and said that means, which is true, 93% of them are unemployed. So employed, sorry, she nearly killed me for it now. Actually employed.
We have lecturer and student relationship.
Sorry.
Elsewhere.
Which is a positive, which is actually a positive thing. If they are able to create a very high percentage of employment in the country, it means they are making a contribution to the country. So I'm just saying, Yes, we do have problematic ones like this one, UniZulu, and Transkei, those two. I mean, we've seen very good administration and organization in the University of Fort Hare that had previously had problems. And you could see that people are using that institution for a good cause. So I was just saying we shouldn't forget that all said and done, let's not overlook those that are making, in the majority of them, a good contribution to the development of our people and creating job opportunities for them, because if we do so, we'll lose a very important point. They might have been created to separate blacks from whites and put blacks in the most backward places, but that has been converted into an opportunity for development. And that point we shouldn't lose. Because desperate people, hungry people, are taking the opportunity to better their lives in this institution. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks,
Chairperson. Let me start by a comment which Honorable Kagan has just concluded, that you know, sometimes when you are seen to be a poor coming from a very poor area or community or background, sometimes it converts us into beggars. To say, what do you expect from a poor person who comes from a poor background? I just want to agree with Honorable Kagan to say, I think we have to rise above the situation which we find ourselves in, to be called people from poor background and say, yes, this is an opportunity for us to make sure that that poor background did not make us to be less human or to be less human beings. Unfortunately, it's the apartheid policies which pushed us to that particular situation. But we can reverse it and convert it into an opportunity which will allow us to develop ourselves. Having said that, Chairperson, I'm looking at, is it slide number 23, if I'm not mistaken. The safety and security part of the submission or presentation or recommendation is that. For me, it looks like there is a lot of criminal activities going or taking place in that place. Maybe, I'm not sure, Chair, through you, to say, I understand that it was not an investigation, maybe an audit. But the discovery of the audit, at least for me, should recommend that there should be an investigation. Looking at the recommendations, for instance, based on this
a slide that I have just mentioned to say really it's a call for concern to me to have this type of recommendation, because it is out of the observation which the audit has discovered to say there is a lot of things that need to be unleashed out of that place. Maybe if we can partner with other departments, your safety and security, the subs and other departments. Because for one to have a bodyguard suggest that is a victim of circumstances. You correctly said, Chairperson, that if you have many people with one person with bodyguards, I think it's called for concern. But one other issue, Chairperson, is that it's with regards to the unions, workers' union. Is it only Nehao as a union in the institution? But if it's only Nehao, are all members of or are all workers members of Nehao? If not, who represent the others? Because if you are not part of the organized workers, sometimes people take advantage insinuating the situation because they know that they belong to no workers' union. So I think that situation also need to be looked into. Otherwise, Chairperson, I think I'm satisfied with the rest. Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you. All I wanted to ask the department and the DG and the management is, having understood that we must always remember what the mandate is of the CHE and what their brief and their major role is in ensuring quality at institutions, we should not expect them to come with magic solutions for us. But unfortunately, that does not absolve the department. And if I say magic solutions, Chairperson, all I'm saying is understanding where we come from, understanding the challenges, but also seeing what is happening across institutions in the post-school sector. We have to improve our ability to manage on the dashboard basis. Leave alone those institutions who clearly illustrate the capability of effective management, absolute frugal management of resources, be it public or private resources. Because every time if there is money lost, it means it's a lost opportunity for a young South African. We've heard what the minister said earlier. We need to get further investment through the private sector in the tertiary and post-school education sector as well. But we will not get that unless we demonstrate that there are ways to manage public financial resources. And just by the way, Chair, I was listening carefully to my two colleagues. I don't think we should make this out to be an issue of poverty. It is also recently that we've had the Steinhoff issue. Human greed is cutting across all sectors in society. And in fact, I just happened to have come across what Mahatma Gandhi said. There is a sufficiency in the world for man's need, but not for a man's greed. And I think that is very telling. And why I say that is, has the time not come for the department to say, having seen the background of what happened within, which necessitated a forensic audit at UniZulu about the 11.5 million, having seen some of the other institutions where we have had poor explanations of what happened, and by the way, the forensic auditors made specific recommendations. It would be interesting for us, in fact, Chair, I would like to suggest that we get a report from the department if they have any indication if the institution in fact implemented those recommendations after the forensic audit was conducted, because it goes about financial controls. Now, I hear that we, and I understand that we have institutional autonomy, but Chairperson, that cannot mean that more and more public resources are pumped into institutions where they are not adequate internal controls and where the necessary systems are not available. So I just wanted to ask, is there any way that the department is considering whether the law or any of the regulations need further tightening, and are there any blockages in the statutes governing these institutions that will inhibit the department's ability to keep a closer watch on how money is being dispersed? And that goes from NSFAS, because if the institution currently has a problem with students protesting about the quantum of money is paid over, how do we know that they are in fact getting the right benefits from NSFAS? And if the institutions can hold back, we've had that in the past, Chairperson, where institutions didn't put through all the monies that were in fact allocated to students. So how do we know? Do we have any system to verify that students are in fact entitled to what NSFAS monies is supposed to allocate to them? So please, if we could have feedback from the department, if they are considering at present, are some of the measures that they need to implement not necessary to in fact be improved, to have a tighter and a closer watch over management of these institutions? Thank you.
And the last one.
Chair, by saying that the University of Zululand might consider moving to Richards Bay, what I'm saying is our poor students deserve better than a university that is mainly dysfunctional. They deserve an efficient, well-run university in a strong economic area where there is business that can donate towards it. There's nothing where the university's main campus is. That's why you need to be in a city or an area where there's actually an economy, so that you have other resources to draw on. You may have a better police force to help you with the crime. You will have better possibilities of land ownership because you're not sitting on the land owned by a chief, and therefore you can't develop. There are all sorts of areas, all sorts of problems that this university has which make it impossible for it to give a good, solid education to students from poor backgrounds. And that's what's of concern. As far as university autonomy goes, I'm afraid there are many, many, many institutions in this government which are not autonomous, which misspend money in mega, mega proportions, far more than universities do. In fact, universities generally are quite frugal institutions that do not misspend their money. So I think what we need to do is look at our existing non-autonomous institutions before we start fiddling with the autonomy of universities. Thank you.
Honourable members, I can hear us going into another direction. Honourable Killian, the report that you're talking about, we dealt with it last year when you were not here. As in the, what is this thing, the forensic, and they should maybe make it available to you. Most of the members, I think they were answering each other also now on the contribution that they have made. I want to, honourable members, reiterate that insofar as this report is concerned, that the CHE has heard us. They hear why we say that the report has not gone far enough. We hear you when you say this is your brief that you have been given. But we think we can leave you with a message also to, notwithstanding the fact that you have come to the end of this one, we think because you give advice to the minister, we think you should take the opportunity of what you have heard, what we said, what the current situation is at the institution, but also reflect on whether indeed you remain convinced that the proposals that you have made will take us to where we would want the institution to be, and maybe ask you also to reflect on all of that, and we trust that the minister will obviously engage with you further. And that we should maybe, honourable members, consider to allow all of them to go through all of it. Our message is we need some speed on this matter. We cannot have a day ticking by where we feel that the institution is spiralling further from what it is. We don't get the impression that all the other oversight that we have done, that we see an improvement in the university, and that's really our worry. The committee will not stop its oversight on UniZulu. We will continue to do that. We will consider, as we discuss our own program, what form our oversight will take. When we come back the next term, the second term of Parliament. By then we hope that all of you have had an opportunity to talk to each other and to discuss where do you take the process to. I do want to say, honourable members, that some of the issues that you have said brought the following thing to my mind, and that is I know that the CHE has done a lot of reports on a range of other things, and maybe we should ask you to come back to refresh us maybe on some of those advice that you gave to the minister on particular areas in higher education. And those you spoke particularly about, you know, those institutions such as the institutions in rural areas, what they mean, the inequities and all of that, because those macro issues, if we don't address it, we will just call it UniZulu, but it will be very many others that fall within that same category. So we might be talking a lot about UniZulu, but we might not talk about the entire higher education sector as it relates to the same and similar problems. I lastly also want to say, honourable members, that the Human Rights Commission has got a report that has been tabled, and a lot of the things that we have discussed here today, as it relates to UniZulu, the Human Rights Commission has also investigated and dealt with, and that we consider asking them to come before us on that report. It deals with the UCT issues, it deals with a range of very many other issues in the entire sector in what are looming problems that are around. And so I think it will be good for us as we deal with the macro issues to combine these things together and hear what they say, because I think those institutions does have a role to also help guide us on what it is we need to do. So I want to ask honourable members, any last response, CEO, Chair, because we will then close the meeting.
Thank you very much. Just in conclusion, we take note of all the comments and advice from the portfolio committee. And as we have identified, and you yourselves, the issue of safety and security of staff and students is quite crucial at all these universities, particularly in Zululand. And I think the University of Zululand has a particular history as well, while others do, in terms of violence. Because I remember when we went to do the assessment to the Prosa Africa, one of the chairpersons of one of the union or something in Howe at the time, Mr. Tully, traumatized at least the clerk, she's a secretary of the DDG, was taking notes for us. He just stood up in front of us, he lifted his shirt up, a large man, and he showed us two bullet wounds on his stomach, being shot on campus. So it is real what is happening at these places. And of course there are other vice chancellors with bodyguards, they just don't know about it, but they're there. So we take note of this, and we will, as council next week, we will report back and for further advice to the minister on these other developments, including the comments that we have had here, in order for her to take the decision and apply her mind. Thank you very much for the time.
All right. No, honourable members, I think for now let's leave it there, but we're not done yet. But our meeting has come to an end, and we are dealing with the Auditor General that is coming next week with their report as it relates to the strat plan and budget, the audit outcomes of the strat plan and budget. Next week, we are also suggesting, honourable members, that we deal with the department's strat plan and budget when we come back. When we come back from the Easter recess, that we then deal with it. If you are okay about that, then we deal with the AG, and then we will go to our famous CPUT. So if you think there are problems in the rural areas, they are very much right here opposite Parliament also. That we have to deal with. Honourable members, I have no reason to keep you here any longer. May I thank all of you for your participation. May I thank the department, the minister in his absentia, the minister's advisor, and the CHE leadership that are here. We will engage further with each other. Thank you very much to the department staff also. Thank you very much. The meeting has come to an end.
Thank you.